Judging by the guitar music in the background, it is another place-by-place fishing report brought to you by Fish and Franks, Robert, and Captain Josh Olive, your friendly fish coach and charter boat captain.
Hi.
Are you a charter boat captain, like for real now? Is the boat in the water?
The boat exists. The boat is finished. The boat is sitting in my side yard. I brought it home yesterday afternoon. It has not been out for a shakedown yet. I would not take anybody else on it, but we'll see how we can get out there on the water this week.
How about tomorrow? We'll go out and go fishing.
I can't do that tomorrow. What? I have to get water lined up.
Well, we can go out for an hour. I'll clear the ramp at the house. You put it in, and we'll just go out.
I don't know if the T-top will even clear your trees now.
Okay, well, let's go out for an hour tomorrow. What do you think, Robert? We just go out for an hour.
Okay.
That was commitment right there.
Well, he wants to take his boat out.
I know he does.
So, okay, right. I'll go out with Josh tomorrow. I want to see this new boat, this new charter boat thing that he's been building and working on.
Can we race Robert?
Sure.
I think that would be
You'll win.
Maybe not. You got 115 horsepower, two Bimini's. He's got 200 some horsepower, but
225 with that big old air catching T-top and that bathroom that takes up all that space and so much weight.
Yeah, I mean, he had to have a bathroom in a boat. You
power
know? Do you have a shower and like bathroom shower? Do you have lower berths with bunks and stuff?
I have none of those things, but it really wouldn't be that hard to turn the bathroom into a shower.
Yeah,
it could be done. It wouldn't take that much.
Yeah, we got to kind of work on the shower aspect.
Like a spa with a massage table and pedicures.
Well, as big as that boat is, he should have a lower deck on it.
Well, the back deck you could use for massaging if you wanted to. I mean, I don't know if that's a service that I would offer, but you know, if somebody wants to bring their masseuse with them, hey, who am I to judge?
Okay. Anyway, as we stay on track and get right to the fishing report, because obviously this is a well-produced show. So,
Yeah, clearly
we stay on topic. Okay, we're at the fishing report. We are going to start on the Peace River and see where we go from there.
That's easy. I got nothing.
Yeah, I got nothing because Robert and I have been at ICAST this whole week. And you know, looking at new tackle and trying to wheel and deal and get some cool stuff. Smart Baits are going to be here. And I talked to Smart Baits. If anybody remembers years ago, I was talking about them. I really fell in love with this soft plastic because it's cool and original. And they're the only ones in the world that produce it. It changes color with water temperature. Now, it's really cool up north because if you ever fish in the summer up there, you know the surface layers, that first 2-3 feet, is one temperature, then down 5-6 feet is a completely different temperature. And this lure really actually changes color going through those different temperature zones. So it can be, you know, like chartreuse and then turn red a little bit, and it's got different colors and it becomes different lure as it goes through the different water temperatures.
And that's a very, very neat idea, but can we buy one to go fishing on the Peace River right now?
Well, I think it's going to work in the Gulf pretty well because you've got that upper levels and lower level stuff.
He just wasn't even paying attention
to it. You know, we actually bought him. He's got the high temperature ones because he only had the low temperature ones. Now we got the high temperature ones, right. So they'll actually work down here.
So it's been pretty warm up there on the Peace River.
Okay, fishing report. Anybody got anything? I don't have nothing.
Good, I segued him around the second time.
Okay.
It's been kind of slow, actually, up there on the river. But I've talked to some guys who are finding some tarpon up there, and not all of them are teeny tiny ones either. Looks like some of that water pushing down, bringing the tilapia and the hoplo catfish, did in fact get some of the tarpon up into the river. And I've had tarpon farther up than the Navigator.
Okay.
Well, this is the time of year when you will get those migratory fish will move up there just scoping things out and feeding, so yeah. That's not too far.
And by
off.
The way, the Navigator has new owners. They've kind of turned it around. We're going to go up and check it out. We'll let you guys know if it's worth driving up river for. So we're going to go up there and find out. I know the owner of the place. I know him and his wife. They're really awesome people. But we're going to go up and see how awesome people, if they do awesome food, and if it's a good witch, a bad witch, or a sandwich, we'll let you guys know.
Sandwich is probably what you're hoping for, though, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping for a good witch sandwich.
Yeah. You know, Not so much with the snook up the river for some reason this week, though. That seemed to have slowed down.
Anything else for a river?
No. Okay. Tarpons. Tarpons is all they were really finding.
I-75.
Juvenile tarpon. Catching or seeing some juvenile tarpon at first light there in the morning, mostly around the middle by the bunks. And they're small. They're like 5 to 20 pounders. He said he didn't see them scattered way around. He said they're actually right up holding tight close to the bridge. Couldn't get any commit, though.
Okay.
Big size redfish, not necessarily right there at the bridge, but in the general area of the I-75.
Now, what
bridge.
Are they?
Mixed size redfish.
Okay.
Small little islands right there and stuff.
He didn't say exactly where. He just said around the 75 bridge, but not under the bridge, not on the pilings.
Okay. So he would be in very, very vague.
Well, you know how people get with their spots, dude. I was probably lucky to get that much out of him.
Well, that's true.
Okay. And the 41 bridge.
Some snook and tarpon, mostly early mornings and at night. And that's all I have honestly heard about.
A couple of black drum and some guys fishing for black drum, catching some Goliath grouper. Not the huge ones, small enough to actually catch them, 30, 40 pound range. Fun size.
Fun size. Except for when you're trying to catch them for the biologists.
Right, yeah, then they're non-existent size.
Yeah, then they might as well be a unicorn. Kind of frustrating. Because that's the exact areas where they want to catch them at.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Lashley Pier.
I've got zero.
I heard about a sawfish caught off the Lashley Pier this past week. Other than that, they caught catfish, and they thought they were reeling up a really big catfish, and it was a juvenile sawfish. They said maybe 3.5 feet long.
Hey, I'd love to catch one hip size.
That would be awesome.
Would be.
Bad thing is, as soon as they realized what it was, they cut the line.
Right.
So they left that little sawfish with probably 20 feet of line right off him. Hopefully he threw the hook.
I don't... yeah. So, hopefully he's all right, but... If they were using a monoleader, there's a good chance of getting away.
The bad thing with sawfish, though, is that if with that long of a leader, it might get tangled around the bill. And if it gets tangled around the bill, then it'll constrict it and you're going to have longer-term problems.
Yeah, I don't... Well, it's all possible. Hopefully it just drags behind him and, you know, then he has a chance to work it out. So, Bayshore Pier.
Bayshore Pier got nothing. That kid the other day was... Not real thrilled with the activity that was going on, except for, what do you say, one little shark had been caught off of there?
And he'd been fishing out there on a fairly regular basis and not seeing a whole lot going on. And, of course, the other Bayshore Pier is closed.
And we looked at it, and we don't understand why, because it doesn't look like there's anything...
I don't see any damage. They said the county told me the damage they found was underneath the water line. Which, there's not a whole lot underneath the water line there at that pier.
1 foot down?
Maybe really? If it's underneath the mud line, they found a problem. I don't know. But the other thing, too, is that, you know, it's probably not worth risking going out there on it since they've got it designated as a construction zone, so trespassing on there is a felony.
Gotcha. All right. A while back I was talking about, well, if you need some work done, call Chuck. Too late, guys. He's already getting all booked up again. He had a little bit of a window of time where he wasn't doing much, and now all of a sudden he's pretty well slammed. He came out to the house.
East famine.
Yeah. he fixed, when we had to replace all the columns and pillars in front of my house, there was a spot where we forgot to put the rain gutter back up. So I said, no, it's right by the front door. Chuck's doing that. If it's in the back of the house, I don't mind going up there and doing it. But when it's right there, you want it to look good. So
right. You need a Chuck quality craftsman.
Finish that. But almost too late, guys. So, you know, if you had that project around the house, should have called him last time I said something. All right. Porchella Canals.
Snook. A lot of small snook back in there. Some black drum. Sand bream. And a whole lot of little mangrove snapper. I just got a text from Officer Ryan. He's fishing in the canal and he soaked a black drum and then he caught a, I don't know, I'm going to guess it's probably about upper 20s, maybe a 30-inch snow trolling through the canal. He was all mad because he thought it was a piling at first, and then it decided to fight a little bit. And he goes, whoa. Wait a minute.
Those piling fish. Oh, snagged again. Whoa, the snag's fighting back.
All right, exactly. So he's having a good time.
Yeah, and more of those bigger snook this week being reported up in there. Chasing down some mullet. A lot of guys are trying to catch them and not doing so well, but I think it's because they're not using big enough baits, because they're watching them in there actively pinning those fish up against the seawalls and attacking them.
Yeah. Yeah, and then same with some of those juvenile tarpon. And then there's been the little mullet coming through. Not little mullet, but fair numbers of, you know, half-pound to one-pound mullet coming through the...
too little for me to want to smoke, but definitely not really a little fish.
No. But that's not a bad thing. I mean, seeing some of that activity coming through, lots of brown water.
Yeah, these guys were filling time because I literally got up. Hey, Barry.
Hey.
Barry, the owner of Star Rods, just walked in the door. Any good fishing stories, Barry?
Not today. We caught a bunch yesterday, though.
Well,
sure.
Cool.
All right, well, stick around because we have a Gulf report.
All right, we were...
Starts to.
We hit pause for a minute. We were chatting with Barry, the owner of Star Rods, about ICAST and all this stuff going on. And they got a new rod coming out. And I was in the Star booth looking at it. It was $300-some. I said...
It's the VPR?
Yeah, and I was like, okay. I said, you got anything else? Well, we've got a very similar action in this rod, and it's 140. I said, okay, count me in.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the stuff is going that way, though. Higher and higher end on this stuff. You can tell that the economy is humming along pretty well when the stuff they keep coming out with is all in that high-end range.
Yeah, there was a lot of high-end tackle there, and it was different, but yeah, I like to have a little bit of the high-end stuff in here, but even people with a lot of money, that's, I guess you got to have that, you know, I want this material and this look and this name.
There's only so many $300 rods you're going to sell.
Right.
You know, even pushing it up to, you know, $180, $200, well, you're making it harder.
I sold quite a few of the $400, $500, $600 Loomis rods when Gary had his, you know, his edge rods. And they were real pricey. Beautiful, gorgeous, absolutely amazing rods. But, wow, $400, $600?
Make your eyes water.
Yeah, you know. But, hey, what the heck. Anyway, Elger Beam. What's going on at Elger Beam?
They've actually had a couple reports of guys catching some nice trout in the evenings. Not a great numbers, but good quality. That stronger incoming tide that we had in the evenings last week, they said they caught a couple of really good trout and some decent mangrove snapper, a couple of whiting, and then some very small snook. A couple guys are seeing a lot of little tarpon rolling around the bridge with a few larger ones rolling around the bridge. But I've been hearing that the fish have been moving in and out of that river fairly regularly, so shouldn't be a big surprise with some bigger tarpon numbers being around there. I just haven't heard anything in the last 3 days.
The only reports that I got were from a couple of snook guys up there, and first they were very happy, and then they were very sad, because they were very happy they were catching whiting to use for bait, and then they were very sad because they could not catch the big snook.
Gotcha.
Very sad.
The only thing I can say is I think that the big mistake they make is when you get a decent sized whiting, keep it to eat. You know, that's good eating fish. And
it is.
The smaller ones that, you know, too small to fillet are, you know, that's great bait.
Yeah, an 8-inch whiting is bait.
So, but if I get the bigger ones, I take the fillets off, then I use the carcass for bait. You know, get the best of both worlds out of it.
Absolutely. Yep. I agree with you on that.
All right. The Micah River area in general, what's going on out there?
Throughout the whole river system itself, especially closer towards the mouth of the river, tarpon. Tarpon have been hanging there fairly regularly. They're not cooperating as well as everyone would like, but there's definitely fishable, targetable numbers of fish there. And quite a few reports of that. You got anything there?
Some of the pan fisher folks up in the canals are catching some good tilapia.
Really?
Like 2 to 4 pound tilapia. Real good ones.
Like up above Elger Beam on the river.
Yeah.
Okay.
Up into the river.
That's not a bad thing.
Okay. How do you spell tilapia?
T-I-L-A-P-I-A.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm really wrong. All right.
Did you even start with a T?
Yes. T-I-L.
A-P-I-A.
Really? T-I-L-A-P-I-A. That's not how you spell it.
Well, that's how I spell it.
Well, you're probably correct, but...
Tilapia.
I'm going to change that.
Okay.
I've wrote it wrong so many times it looks better the other way. All right. South Gulf Cove canals.
I got nothing.
The Gulf Cove canals have actually been pretty good. Guys catching some snook in there on the troll mornings and evenings. And the small tarpon bite in there has been pretty good. Some of them are surprising people who are trolling those lures for snook. But if you're out there focusing on catching those small tarpon, using the smaller baits, searching in areas where they're actually rolling in a little bit deeper water drop-offs, probably going to do better.
Yeah, I haven't heard much. My one guy, I haven't seen him in a couple months now. At least you get your feelers out, too.
Okay.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes not.
All right, the West Wall. What do we got there?
Redfish are starting to show up pretty well over there under the bushes and even out on the bar a little bit. Guys are catching them on frozen shrimp, cut bait, anything stinky. If you're throwing any of the soft plastics, scent them with either, you know, Pro-Cure or use the gulp, something. Work it real, real slow, or just better off dead sticking it.
Just remember your expectations. You know, 2, 3, 4 redfish out there now, that's a good day. You know, the guys who remember going out and doing 30 or 40 in a day, you know, they might be a little annoyed with those numbers, but that's where we're at.
Yeah.
Okay. And Cape Hayes, I think, is our next place.
Well, a lot of bonnet heads. Been some scattered Spanish mackerel on it. A couple of pompano. And some very small trout. Kind of a hopscotch of stuff. It's coming back to life. It's kind of nice.
Yeah, and those pompano seem to be moving in fair numbers, which is not really surprising. That's usually a good spot for them, and there are more that we'll talk about at a different spot here shortly.
Okay, so. Bull Bay, Turtle Bay?
Definitely seeing more life back in there again. A lot of scattered trout, ladyfish, some snook, and redfish. And then getting quite a few reports of the bonnet heads cruising around in through there, along with a couple of other assorted small sharks that people are seeing.
And don't forget the random tarpon blowing up on people's trout baits.
Oh, yeah. Especially in the backside there, Turtle Bay.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that big deep trough. This is the time of year when they do show up and they're pretty good. I've never been able to catch one in there, though.
Catch one or hook one?
Either one.
Really?
I've watched them.
You can go in there and trout fish more.
Going in there and casted to them, tried like heck. Because, those fish are 10 pounds to 110 pounds in that trough.
You don't go in there and fish for them. You go in there and fish for trout.
I don't know. I know one captain that can go in there pretty steady sometimes and really do a good job on them.
Well, listen, some people are really fancy.
I know.
Okay.
I know. But I've tried it a handful of times. Just no success. But it's still cool. I think it'd be awesome to hook one in that with all that shallow water around. He'd be just a blast.
All right. Takes us out to the Cape Hayes Reef, Danger Reef.
Spanish mackerel. A couple of gag grouper I heard about. And then some small sharks. Black nose, a couple black tips, even a couple of decent-sized lemon sharks.
And one short cobia.
One short cobia.
Yep.
Nice. You catch it?
Nope. But somebody sent me the picture saying, hey, look at this remora I caught.
Uh-huh.
Nope. Usually it goes the other way around. They send me pictures of the baby cobia that are remoras.
Yep. And it's funny because they do look quite similar, except when you get to the head.
Yeah. If it's got a big old shoe print on the top of its head, that's usually the pretty strong identifying characteristic right there.
Yeah, one's got spikes and all kinds of other stuff. It looks very prehistoric, like it wants to attack. And the other one looks like somebody's got a gummy shoe on the bottom, on the top of its head, you know?
The funny thing about them is as similar as they look in color and in shape, they're not even closely related at all.
Really?
No.
Okay. Well, let's try what's related to Gasparilla Sound and the area between Boca Grande and, you know, that whole thing there.
It's a bad segue, man. It was a bad one.
Well, I'm doing the best I can with what I got.
You're trying to and I ain't got much.
Have you met me?
You
know, this is like all there is, man. It's not like that. It's really okay. Sharp as a tack. I'm kind of a dull as a, you know.
Tarp as a shack.
A lot of snooker moving back into behind Boca Grande and in the bayou behind the Three Sisters and up into the canal system there, along with a few black drum. Been some Spanish mackerel out there on those flats around the Three Sisters, along with a few ladyfish, and then same kind of situation going on over on the other side around Keopalau, devilfish, sandfly, that whole area. It's all starting to get a lot of life back inside there again, so I'm getting a lot of mixed match of fish, sizes, quantities. It just depends on who you talk to, but compared to what it was, you know, two weeks ago, really starting to get a lot of life.
Okay, cool. All right, that's gonna, if I can get this button to work, and paste. There we go, we got it. Okay, Frank Robert and Captain Josh Oliver are gonna talk about the Placida Pier and Trestles.
The pier is still closed down, so it's a lot of areas for boaters to sit and anchor up to now.
They've probably got another 3 weeks before that's supposed to open up.
I like that. That's a key word
allegedly
in that description.
Intended to open up.
Pompano, bonnet heads, mangrove snapper, a lot of snook of assorted sizes moving back in there. Heard of some Spanish mackerel and some ladyfish.
And some fairly nice mangrove snapper, too. Not the little teeny tiny 8-inchers that we expect to be out there, but some good 12, 13-inch fish. So, big enough to make you smile.
There you
big
go.
Enough to make a sandwich.
Yeah.
A legal sandwich.
A legal sandwich.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those bigger mangrove snapper are a good fight, too.
Especially right in there around those pilots.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... That really is a game fish at that point.
Yeah.
Because they're hard to get to bite, and when you hook them, they don't give up quick.
Mm-mm.
No, I like when you find smaller bait, and you can get on the mangrove shorelines. Sometimes you can find these schools of nice, and they're like 14, averaging around 14-inch mangrove snappers, and they're literally tearing the surface up like snook, and they're very active. I mean, it's like catching a smallmouth is what it's like.
Yeah.
You know, it's like catching a 14-inch smallmouth bass.
I never caught a smallie, but I do know that mangrove snapper are really an underrated sport fish here.
Well, because they're usually not big enough, and that's the problem. Once they hit that 14-inch size, they got some power, they got the speed, they blow up on the surface, and it's a lot like a smallmouth bass. Except with big old teeth. You got teeth like a house cat, you know? All right, Lemon Bay. What's going on up there?
It's all you, Josh.
It hasn't been amazing up in the bay. It seemed like the red tide took a little bit longer to clear out of there, but the guys who are fishing it have been hearing some redfish along some mangrove shorelines up there. Ski and Rag Alley have definitely had some snook in them. None of them have been big. They've been, you know, 20, 22, 24-inch fish. But the numbers seem to have come back pretty well since that fish kill, which is a really good thing.
Yeah. Well, everybody was freaking out about that red tide. It killed everything. The world was dying, dead. And that's by no means even close to the worst red tide I've seen here.
No.
And to see the fish come, it's staggering there's any fish left anywhere. With what we take commercially, recreationally, the red tide kills, this, that, I mean, all the rest of this stuff, it's hard to believe you can still go out and catch fish.
Yeah, it is.
I mean,
when you think about those profound numbers.
It's literally mind-boggling as to why the fishing remains good here. Because most of the time, you can go out and have a good day here. I mean, and I still have, you know, go out, and I still think you have some great days here. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that one trip we did with Carl, that I literally rate that as into the great days for as far as big redfish and losing the big snook. And that wasn't like we weren't hooking them. We just couldn't get them into the boat, you know.
Right.
I think if Carl and I might have been on one of the rods, it might have been a little different. But when you've got guys from up north and you've got 40-inch snook on a rod with 15-pound test and all that, that's double tough to do. If you don't have some time and experience on that rod, you know, yeah, with those kind of fish, you're really stretching the envelope that you're going to be able to land them. But getting them up even close to the boat where you can see the size and watching them head shake and stuff, it's still pretty awesome. So Englewood Pier, the Anger Pier. Englewood Anger.
Anger Pier.
Yes.
Some Spanish mackerel, mangrove snapper, a few whiting, a couple of bonnet heads during the daytime. And then at night you got the guys doing some of the catch and release snook fishing, casting around the bridge, and seeing a lot of tarpon of assorted sizes too. I haven't heard a lot of anyone catching the tarpon, but I've at least been hearing the guys saying they're seeing quite a few.
The guys I usually talk to who fish that did not fish that this week because they were in the Keys. Would you like to hear what they caught there?
Sure.
Mahi.
Mahi.
Lots of mahi.
Really?
It's been a good early summer for mahi. I've been hearing that from quite a few people that went down there. So I think some of these...
Wasn't mahi-mahi one of the most prolific, fastest-growing fish there is?
It is one of the fastest-growing fish in the sea, yep.
Yep. Shortest-lived, fast-growing. You know, it's...
Yeah, they only live like 5 or 6 years or something like that.
3 to 4 years.
3 to 4?
Yeah. So you're looking at a fish that's literally growing 2 to 3 inches a month.
Wow.
Yeah, think about that. I mean, a 50-pound mahi be maybe 3 to 4 years old, right at the end of his life.
Yep.
Well, it's kind of like sea trout. They don't live that long, and if you're, you know, going out fishing for them and you keep a bigger trout, it's, you know, if you've got a trout that's over 24 inches, it's not like letting him go is doing him big favors. He's not long for the whole thing anyway. So, you know, keeping the bigger trout to eat is actually not hurting the resource. It hurts keeping the smaller ones more than it does the bigger ones.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, people absolutely don't realize that, but keeping the bigger trout over 24 inches, you know, and all that actually hurts the trout fishing less than keeping a, you know, barely legal trout, because they can spawn again, or, you know, they're going to spawn several more times.
I try not to argue with you too much on your show here, but the more I hear from the biologists about the big old fat fecund female fish theories, the more I start to believe that that's outdated thinking to let the small ones reproduce, because the bigger fish are the ones that are going to have the better genetics. They're the ones that have survived for that longer time. So while they may produce a smaller percentage of viable eggs, the number is going to vastly outproduce any of those smaller females, and the offspring will be of higher quality. It's one thing that they've found in aquaculture, is that if you want to produce small fish that are going to grow rapidly, that are going to reach a bigger size more quickly, that are going to be healthier from the outset, you need to start with your older, larger female fish.
Really?
Yep.
Okay. I'll consider it.
I'll consider it a lot more, too, because of the aquaculture thing that is going on more and more with freshwater and saltwater. Because they've made leaps and bounds as far as from a biology standpoint of this aquaculture has really opened their eyes to some of their stuff, because it's actually reinforced some of their theories that they've had in the past, and it's also crushed some of their theories that they've had in the past, which if he's been reading about it, I'm going to have to probably agree a little bit more so on it. But what I've read in the past, that saltwater aquaculture, like cobia,
right,
and tuna that they've been doing, they've started to really perfect it. Not perfect it, but they're getting better at it and more proficient at it. I could see that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I just go back to the days when I was fishing and we were catching those great big old female snook, and the eggs were discolored, and you knew there wasn't, these were not really viable breeders. Mm-hmm. They were, you could literally look and the eggs just didn't look good. They just didn't look healthy when you got to the eggs and stuff, when you're filleting them out, and all of a sudden you go, and you're, wow, what's that? You know, and now you're the first time you see it, you're second guessing, should I even eat this fish?
Right.
Right.
So.
Well, and that does happen. You know, you're going to get some animals that are not going to be healthy, regardless of whatever size they may happen to be. You know, that animal may have been an amazing breeder until it contracted some kind of disease that might or might not be related to age that has led to those eggs being problematic. But, you know, we have a good resource in the barramundi farming. Barramundi are pretty closely related to snook. It's not a...
Yeah, the Australian thing.
Basically, it's the Australian snook. Mm-hmm. So those animals, they're raising in captivity in very large numbers now because, just like snook, they're delicious. They have white meat. It's very popular. And the barramundi...
I think the big snook tastes so much better than the little snook. I think it's a much better meal. I think they're just... Smaller snook, I think, are good. You know what I mean? But for my personal taste buds and the way I enjoy eating, I like the, you know, 40-inch snook. I think the much better flavor, I think the consistency of the meat all the way around is just so much better. It's just big, flaky chunks, and it's awesome. You know, where the smaller snook is good, I don't think it compares to the bigger ones.
The female barramundi that they're using for egg stripping are preferentially 36 to 48 inches.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
They want big girls.
So, reefs and wrecks.
Phenomenal.
Out in the Gulf of Mexico.
Well,
absolutely,
you know,
amazing.
We've got Red Snapper open through the 20th. That's Friday upcoming. So that gives you an excuse to get out there. If you've looked at the marine forecast for this weekend, it's absolutely gorgeous. 5 knots or less, seas 1 foot or less. That's all the way out to 40 miles. So, you know, I wouldn't necessarily go out there in your little flats boat, but I would understand if somebody wanted to risk that, especially if you go out with a buddy in another boat. So.
I'm literally building a flats boat to go out into the Gulf because I run that 24-foot boat. It's got a great hull. It takes water well, but with my boat, the way I have it laid out, because I laid it out for just relaxing, enjoying fishing, it's all open inside, so if it fills with water, I'm screwed. This other one I'm building, almost exactly the same hull, is big front decks, big back decks, little cockpit area, so if it fills with water, I don't care, I just keep driving.
Right.
You know, let the water drain out when it wants
to. Not enough space to fill with water anyhow.
Right, so. I'm very minimal cockpit space, and I think I'm actually going to put a little side railings on the back, just something so you're not standing there wide open to the water, easy to fall in. I'm not going to do them on the front, but I think I'm going to do a little side railing on the back just because I'm getting a little older and I tend to trip more, fall down more. I'm not quite as light on my feet as I used to be. I thought that would be kind of a nice addition to it, but with all the decks, a lot of flotation, it could literally fill with water, just let the water drain out and keep coming back.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
So,
the only reason I
and it's 24 foot
with the little boats is, you know, most of them are going to be running single motors. I know motors are a lot better than they used to be. It still makes me nervous to be running out 30, 40, 50 miles out there, no matter how good the weather is, on a single motor. So
yeah, well, that's why I didn't buy one boat, because it was supposed to be out for out in the Gulf, but only one motor on it.
Yeah.
If I'm going to spend all that money for a big boat, then I want to travel out and do all that. I want two. Because you can't get up and run on plane with just one motor on a boat set up with twins, but you can idle back.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what, I can, you know, if I can get one or the other running, I might come back slow, but I come back.
Yeah, and that's the reason why you want to go out there, you know, with a buddy in another boat. So that way, if you do have an issue, one of you can tow the other back if it comes down to it. Because if you have to wait for sea tow,
I wish I was that smart, but
time.
I'm probably going to be taking my boat out by myself.
Well, and it's not just that. Let's say you can't tow them in physically because of the weather or what have you. At least your buddy can get back to cell phone range to call somebody to come out.
Well, you need to have a marine band radio when you're out there with a minimum of a 6-foot whip antenna.
Mm-hmm.
Because
most of them don't,
and the antenna needs to be detachable with extra cord on it so you can stand up on the center console or whatever it is and hold the antenna as high as possible, because everything about line of sight,
yeah.
Earth curves and radio waves travel in direct lines, so if you're out there and you're not, it's not tall enough, you know, you can make cell phone calls from way out in the Gulf if the boat's tall enough because line of sight, you
yep.
know. So, anyway, getting back
out
there.
Fishing out there?
What's out in the fishing in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, aside from those red snapper, the guys have been finding a whole smorgasbord of snappers out there. I mean, I've heard pretty much every snapper that we have going on out there. The mangroves, the lanes, which we typically expect to see. The yellowtails, which are biting better at night, but which some guys have been getting to bite during the day by chumming them up. And also a surprising number of muttons, especially in the south end of this area, guys going out of more like Sanibel rather than going out of Boca Grande and Venice, catching multiple keeper mutton snapper on a trip.
Along with the open water fish out there, they're getting a lot of African pompano, some king mackerel still, a few blackfin tuna, a lot of mixed sizes of mahi, dorado, dolphin, whatever you want to call them. You know, depends on what island or wherever you think you're from.
Oh, here, I've got this. Patrick Sabile, a band of anglers. Now, what do you guys think of this? This is, I call it a double jig. It's like too many lead fish facing each other. The hooks, it's in a V shape where the hooks come to the center. I'm picturing this going out when you got a school of bonita or something blitz, and a lot of times there's blackfin tuna underneath. I think that's going to be small enough and heavy enough to cast it past the bonita, let it sink, and bring it back through those blackfin. I think they're going to beat the tar out of it.
I think he's got the colors going the wrong direction.
The colors are going the wrong direction?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I want those bait fish to look like they're drifting down, dead, dying. I want this white to be on the bottom or on the top.
Oh, okay.
So it looks like they're drifting down that way. And then when it turns around to go up the other way, now their belly's up. I think he just needs to switch his paint scheme around.
Actually, just take the bellies and put it on the inside, yeah. Put the backs on the outside. I'll tell Patrick about it. I'd come up with a thing for a lure for him, too, and I can't remember what it was. I got so involved in my new rod and reel and merchandising thing that I was... I'm not talking about it. I just got a brand new idea nobody's ever done before. So I'm not talking about it, but it's going to be cool, boys and girls. It's really going
to
be cool.
But your lure idea, you wrote it down on a napkin or something, right?
No, I got it in my head. I have to wait for it to come back. Because once it gets in there, it kind of goes around the back. And after the radiation treatments and the diabetes.
So you
and
hope it comes back out of there.
It'll eventually bubble back to the top. It's like anything else. You know, it's in there and it's kind of mixed in. And all of a sudden, that just kind of bubbles up and hits the top of the brain. And I'll be like sleeping and wake up. And go, oh, yeah, that's what it was.
You know, the one thing that has surprised me offshore has been the lack of good grouper reports. You know, some guys are getting into some nice reds, but a lot of guys have been hoping to find some scamps or some gags and still not coming up with them, even running 50, 60, 70 miles out.
You know, the weird part about it is, so what do you think of that, Robert? What do you think of Band of Anglers' new... I think that's going to be a blackfin tuna catching crazy lure.
I don't know if I want to catch two of them at the same time on it, though.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Oh, yeah, you're definitely going to catch two at the same time, because he grabs it, and he's got the hook hanging out of his mouth. The other fish sees there's something hanging out of your mouth. I'm going to steal it. He grabs that. Now you've got two.
Wow, I didn't even think about two blackfin tuna on at the same time.
Two bonita.
Two tuna at slightly different angles to each other might kind of fight each other more than they're fighting you.
It could be, but...
Might make it easier. I don't know. We'd have to go out
there and look a double to find out. I never even considered the double aspect of that. And he literally made this for freshwater fishing. He thought this would be great for, you know, because you could pull it back through the weeds and, you know, it was not, he didn't even think of it.
I think even ice fishing as a vertical jig for like walleye and stuff like that, it would be absolutely killer.
It's
going to
be a stunning, yeah, ice fishing rig.
It's got a lot of versatility.
Vertical jigging and walleye and that kind of stuff. But first thing I thought was tuna.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
That's awesome eating. But he'll market it for, you know, the other fish. But that wasn't my original thought. Okay. Anything else in the Gulf of Mexico?
Well, a lot of Spanish mackerel in closer to shore along with the schools of bonita. Okay. Anywhere from 3 to 20 miles out, there's quite a few of them mixed in out there.
And don't forget the tarpon.
Yeah. Yeah, tarpon, right.
Still been some of those pretty well off the beaches.
Yeah. Yeah, they're still out there in that 7 to 9 mile mark, basically 35 mm-hmm. to 40 feet of water. Got to look for them, but when you do find them, they're pretty happy fish because not a lot of people are finding them and messing with them.
Yeah, because nobody's bothering.
Yeah.
I mean, most people aren't even, they're not paying attention to rolling fish that close in. They've got straight ahead going out into the deep Gulf. Here I go.
Yeah.
The only thing about catching them out there is like catching them in Boca Raton Pass. They can go so deep on you. You know, they're going down 30, 40 feet, you know, skimming the bottom while they're on the line. And then they come up and do that skyrocket thing, and they're literally 10 plus feet out of the water, their tail. So the top of that fish's head is 16 feet out of the water. And that's one heck of a crash when they come down. And
that's still awesome to
see. You don't want it to crash in the boat.
No, you don't want to crash in the boat. Really not a great idea. If
them free jumping that high, though, is so cool. I don't care if it's in the harbor or offshore. When they clear the water literally by 10 feet with the bottom of their body,
yeah,
that's just scary amazing.
All right. Well, we're into the passes now. What are we going to do with the passes?
Honestly, what I've heard has been some Spanish mackerel.
Where?
Venice.
Okay. Venice. Venice.
Gasparilla and Boca and Captiva. Those are literally the only reports I've gotten for any of the passes at all of anything.
Anything, Josh?
We've had some pompano around Boca Grand Pass, mostly on the KO side, actually. And the guys who have run across them say that there's not one or two pompano, it's schools of pompano. And those schools are bleeding inwards towards the harbor at the upper end of Pine Island Sound.
All right. And that's going to take us, if you're just walking on the beach, casting a rod out, you know, just spending time on the beach at first thing in the morning or later in the evening. If you're casting out, how's that going?
Venice and Boca are the only two places I've had reports on. Same thing. It was pompano, some whiting, a few snooks starting to really move back in on both those spots. Other than that, I haven't heard much of the other areas.
It's been pretty much the same further south.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even up there like Inglewood Beach and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I've heard it's a little slow because still sporadic red tides popping
slow,
up and down.
But that's what you're seeing. That's the general mix of fish. In fact, the only thing that I haven't really heard out there in the surf has been flounder.
Okay. Panarassis, Sanibel Island, anything there?
I haven't heard anything this week at all down that area.
There have been some pompano down there as well on the inside, not so much on the outside, more on the Pine Island side than the river mouth side. They've also been seeing some tarpon down there, not huge numbers of them, but some fairly good sized fish.
Around that St. James City area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That's going to take us onto the Coosatchee River.
Zero.
Algae. Blue-green algae. Don't eat it.
Okay. And Matt Lachey.
Some snook. A handful of redfish. Some trout, mostly on the smaller side, but definitely catchable numbers. And then there has been a few tarpon cruising around in that area of assorted sizes, mostly smaller guys in that 30 to 50 pound range. About you, Mr. Olive?
I think you pretty well covered it, although I heard more redfish than you did, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't heard a ton. I've just heard of a few. But, hey, it's still better than what it's been.
Yeah. No
kidding. It's kind of nice. It's just like you said, you know, don't expect a 30 redfish day, but a good day now is 3 to 6.
Yep.
All right. That's going to take us around to Pine Island Sound. You know, I've got the Reaper Rod logo here on the Pine Island Sound thing, and it's amazing how many people at the show, because Tim doesn't do iCast and all that, and there's no website to go buy it. It's a cult thing, you know. You got to know somebody who knows somebody that knows where to get a Reaper. And that, how many people at iCast, how many rod companies, smaller ones, bigger ones, all know about Reaper Rods?
Yep.
And
they're very, very familiar with them.
They're like, Tim scares the heck out of these people because he's done what nobody else has been able to do. There's no marketing. There's no, you know, it's all word of mouth. He's got one little Facebook page that really doesn't do much, but it's a great product for a small factory custom rod is a really good price. And
he's done what Barry did essentially 40 years ago,
50 years ago. Yeah.
You know, I mean, just a total grassroots occult following.
Yeah.
I mean, just amazing. And to have these other guys going, oh, yeah, we know him.
Yeah, it was. And I got asked a few questions about reaper rods because, you know, Fishing Franks and reaper rods are kind of, you know, synonymous for, you know, we sell a lot of reapers. And, you know, some of these companies trying to figure out how they did it. And I said, well, I got no idea. I said, I don't know anything about it. I, you know, Tim just sells rods and we like to sell them. So he was, but he's.
It is hard to quantify. It really is, because, you know, what's truly different about the rod? You know, the components that are in the rod, you could buy those components. You could build a rod that would look a whole lot like that rod.
But the difference
is, it wouldn't be that rod.
Tim makes it work. And that was the one thing. People have approached me with the same basic types of rods for years, and they're garbage. Literally junk. I would say 98... or 99 out of 100 microwave guide rods don't work as well. I don't care if they're charging $50 or $500. They don't work as well as a standard $100 rod on the rack.
Right.
But all of a sudden, here comes Tim, who figured it out. A lot of trial and error, lots of practice. But if you've ever met Tim, you can kind of get the idea that when he decides
OCD.
he decides he's going to do something, this is going to be good. And it literally is shocking, the fishing industry, what's happening with reaper. And I mean, major companies to other smaller rod companies can't figure out what's going on. Tim can't keep up, and these guys are just begging people to buy their rods.
And it's really something, because, you know, you're right, those microwave guides have been around for a while. The first time I saw them, I said, hey, here's something cool and interesting and new, let's try to play with it. I didn't find anything special about microwave
guides. I actually thought it was really worse.
Yeah, so I just blew them off as a gimmick. And when I first saw the reaper rods, I said, you got to be kidding me, who made these rods? I mean, they look good, but they put these crappy microwave guides on them. And Tim said, no, wait, you got to actually try it. And I said, I've tried these before. He said, no, you got to try it.
And
I tried it, and that's what makes the difference.
I'm 100% on your side, because I've had people trying to sell me this stuff, and I literally looked at it as gimmicky. I don't care, you know, because they didn't work. And there were so many other good guide systems that actually worked. And then all of a sudden, Tim, and he gets me to try it, and next thing you know, I'm selling, you know, hundreds or thousands of them. And the biggest complaint you've got is that, okay, I'm here to buy my second one or my third one or my fifth one or whatever it is. They just can't stand it. So
yeah, well,
anyway,
some of us get it bad, and it's to the point that on my boat, all that's going to be on there is reaper rods. I ordered 17 reaper rods to cover every base.
And you're not alone. There is dozens of charter boats that are now just, you know, whatever the brand of reel they're using, and, you know, I would say Penn has captured probably 3/4 of that, but it's all reaper, and it's a phenomenon. So anyway, we won't bore you anymore with that, but it's just really weird when you've got some of the biggest rod companies, reel companies in the world, coming up asking me questions about this little place that builds rods in Punta Gorda. What are they doing? How are they doing that? You know, what's going on with those guys? You know?
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, Pine Island Sound.
An assortment of tarpon, especially right along the ICW. Some snook and redfish all along some of the little islands and some of the oyster bars. And then out on the open flats and some of the deeper troughs, they're getting some Spanish mackerel, a few trout, some pompano, and quite a few little bonnet heads and black-nosed sharks. Kind of a mixed gamut. That whole area has come back to life again. And they're talking about different bait fish and schools of little bait swimming around. So I think that's what's bringing some of that other life back.
I have had some reports of guys finding patches of, I don't really kind of call it red tide here, but ugly, discolored, murky water that seems to be relatively lifeless. So if you find any of that, just kind of avoid it, work your way around it, try to stick to the clean water. That's where the fish are going to be.
Good, solid advice there.
Okay. Oh, there it is. I'm trying to add Josh's little advice to this.
No, definitely good advice.
Let me know if you need to spell any words.
Hey. Nobody said spelling Frank.
I tried to keep them small, but...
Nobody said spelling Frank. You know, that's not...
Yeah, I don't know if Frank makes the best English teacher, but he's good at other things, so credit where credit's due.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You know, you got to translate what I write. If you really want to do the fishing here, just, you know, figure out what I meant by that. You know, the words are usually pretty close. Okay, so anyway, Jug Creek Shoals, Pokelia.
Honestly, I haven't heard much there at all.
The Pompano. I think that's where we're getting our Pompano leakage up into the harbor, is from Pokelia area. And that's the only thing that I've heard out of there.
Okay. Two Pines.
A lot of snow.
Burnt Store, Two Pines.
A lot of snow. Handful of redfish. Couple of oddball pompano, especially down there by Two Pines. And then they are also seeing a couple of tarpon, mostly juveniles, hanging out along the inside of the bar there between Burnt Store and Two Pines. I haven't heard of any of the bigger tarpon that are usually out front on the other side of the bar, but... Yeah. Oh, and there's a guy that wade fishing and had an alligator scare the daylights out of him.
Is he sure it was an alligator?
Yeah. Yeah, because it popped up about 20, 30 feet away from him after he got kind of bumped.
There was an alligator in Boca Grande Pass, and I said, you sure it's not a croc from down south?
That's what I mean.
And they said, no, there was no teeth showing. In the picture, it just was a smooth face. And for those of you boys and girls, if you meet a crocodile out in the flats, this is not a good thing. An alligator is not going to bother you. He might scare you, but he is not interested in coming after you. That's not the way a gator works. But a crocodile, it could go either way.
Well, a crocodile might be a little more problematic. Crocodiles are somewhat more aggressive when they're actively feeding. If he feels like you've invaded his territory, that might be a problem. But
crocodile
American
attack.
Crocodiles are pretty shy.
Yeah.
So if you see the animal, chances are really good he's not coming after you. If you don't see him and he's in the area, that's a problem. If you see him and he disappears, that's when you want to be a little more concerned.
Yeah, but the crocodiles, you can actually, when their mouth is closed, you can see the teeth on a croc. And we've got some crocs down in the Everglades and 10,000 Islands. There's actually crocodile pockets down there. Most of what Florida has is alligators. And alligators are pretty timid because there's still a lot of rednecks around that we like to eat alligator. So that keeps them fairly timid. But to see an alligator in Boca Grande Pass and alligators down by Two Pines, you know, it's not uncommon this time of year. It'll scare the bejeebas out of you if all of a sudden you got a 10-foot gator, you know, all of a sudden swimming along while you're standing there in the water. But he's probably not going to bother you. I mean, it's very low probability.
Very low.
But
very
a croc, 50-50.
Well,
you
don't know.
If you
50-50.
If you see the teeth.
I still think your chance is pretty low.
If you see the teeth on that fish when its mouth, or that gator when the mouth is closed, that's a croc. I'm backing up. I don't care. I'm backing up. I'm going
to back up from the alligator, too, just to be on the safe side. But, you know, the important thing to remember about that, too, because I've had a lot of people ask me about the crocodiles when we talk about them before, is that this is a native animal. The American crocodile is a native species. This is not another invasive that's come to Florida. This is an animal that is supposed to be here.
I can't believe how many people think manatees aren't native to Florida. It makes no sense.
It's become a huge thing that manatees are not native. That's a great conspiracy theory.
Because of their name.
The West Indian manatee.
Exactly.
But Florida was part of the West Indies.
People don't know geography. I mean, how many people...
Well, they don't know history. They've never picked up a book and literally learned, but they didn't know that Florida was part of the U.S. They never went that far north. You know what I mean? If you're in a boat and you don't have a map and you've got no way to get up, you know, and you don't have a satellite picture or a map or anything, and you just come against the shore and you look at Florida, if you landed, say, in Daytona Beach, that could be an island. You know what I mean? And they go around south, that might have just been another big island. If you don't try to get around the north end of it, which could take years in a sailboat that only moves 3 to 6 miles an hour. You know.
But the thing is, it works really well with some people's narrative, and people do not like the manatees because the manatee has been used as an excuse to have slow speed zones for boats and to limit building boat docks and to limit marina building, and so there's a lot of manatee hate out there. And this,
but
it just...
You never
it just,
hate...
It goes really well with...
The trick is not to hate the animal. It's... you can really dislike the people who use it as a leverage point.
Right.
But it's not the manatee's fault. They're pretty cool, stupid old creature, you know. They're just a big, dumb sea cow. They didn't do anything wrong. Now, there's a whole group of people that I would like to have... How did we phrase that the other day, Robert? I said, I needed a safe haven against away from people who want safe spaces.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That whole group with the safe spaces and all that. You need a safe haven away from those people because they're pretty vile and they use anything to promote hate and, you know, and they're not in understanding and, no. You know, like the animals, be a little worried about the people. So
they don't
anyway,
care about your opinion. They just want their own opinion, and that's all that matters. But
and
they
they've never
a
read a
spot
book.
To yell at somebody.
Yeah, they've never read a book. If it wasn't a YouTube video about it, they don't know. So anyway, the east side, what's going on over there?
Some redfish, snook, bonnethead
really?
Sharks.
On the east side?
Yep. A lot of bonnethead sharks. Some mangrove snapper, especially any of the places over there on the east side. Basically, try to find yourself pinch points where you got some good moving water, whether it's due to the breeze or due to a pinch point where there's some stronger current. Moving water is kind of the key thing over there. You get out into some of those really open flat spots that have no moving water. They're kind of void of some life, but get to those pinch points. Also right there in Pirate Harbor, a lot of juvenile tarpon right inside Pirate Harbor right now. It's that typical summer pattern over there, making a lot of people crazy, but you're going to see them.
Glad you heard about all that stuff. All I had was some small trout and a few snapper up there along the bushes.
You heard about the juvenile tarpon in there, you just forgot.
I didn't hear anybody talking about them this week. I know they should be in there. I know people have been talking about them.
Yeah. Hey, I gotta make some phone calls.
Couple here Couple. And there. Just to keep current.
Just to try to keep up a little bit.
Sometimes the hard part is getting people to give you any of that information, though. Well, you make the phone call, and it's like, oh yeah, I did, I caught, I was, but...
I've literally got about a half a dozen regular customers on my phone, and they either text me or I call them so I can find out actual...
Half a dozen, I would say probably closer to 3 or 4 dozen.
But it's good, viable information, because these guys fish 3 to 5 days a week just on their own or with their friends, and they give me some pretty accurate fishing reports. They might not tell me it's that third bush on the left, but I'm going to be within a quarter of a mile to where they're actually fishing.
Right. All right. Alligator Creek, Poacher's Cut, Skating Rink?
Honestly, I haven't heard anything over there at all except for some jacks right at the mouth.
Are you undoing my table, Josh?
No, I'm not. I'm actually putting another screw into it to help it hold together better.
So you're literally putting a screw into my table so it's not going to fall apart.
Yes.
You're getting a little worried over there about your feet with the way this table's creaking? I'm listening to this tick, tick, tick. What the heck is that? Look over, Josh has got a screwdriver, and he's literally trying to put another screw in the table because it's getting a little wobbly here. So, all right, Alligator Creek. We had a guy from England in the other day, and he listens to, cheerio, pip, pip, all the English things. Hey there, guys. We love you in England. You know, the Brits are awesome. But he was in... He was saying, oh, man, I listen to your podcast all the time. We love listening to the fishing reports. We come to Florida for, like, they come 1 week a year. And he likes keeping up on what's going on, where the fishing is and all that. So he listens to this. And then he saw where we did it. He was laughing. He says, oh, my God, you know, we didn't have room on for the mic stand. So I bolted them to the ceiling. I had the microphone stands hanging from the ceiling. We got this.
There's a reason that this is a podcast and not a video.
Yeah, there's a reason
this
nobody wants
to be on YouTube.
It was just him and his wife. They looked at it and just went, "Oh my God!" He was laughing. He says, "I can't wait to because him and his buddies listen to the fishery report over there, And he says, I can't wait to tell people I was here. He took a couple pictures of it. I was like, oh, maybe you shouldn't share the pictures.
Yeah, but you think about this one. Okay, he's got this perception in his mind of just something about radio. Now think about the perception in our minds that we get from TV. Because you've got Pawn Stars is the perfect example. Okay, Bill and Linda went there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had several other customers gone there. You watch that show, and you would swear the place is pretty good size. They literally have the same square footage we do.
Yeah, they're small.
Minus
they're like
the, minus the bait room.
Yeah, they're like 1,800 square feet. They're not big.
They've got a big area outside that they added on for selling merchandise.
Right.
But I mean, you look at it and the stuff
the gift
that they
shop?
Buy. Yeah. Basically, but everyone I've talked to said like it's the size of Fish and Frank's, if not smaller.
Well,
but you watch it, and especially with the size of the guys that work there.
Yeah,
let's face it.
Yeah, there's some pretty big
looks,
dudes.
It looks like it's.
But what's really funny is like the guy who was at the tent sale this last year, and it summed it up perfectly. He goes out and he's talking to Tim from Reaper Rods. He says, "Where's Fish and Frank's?" And he's standing there. There's like 2,000 people here. There's display booths everywhere. He had to walk through the store because you were coming in from the back. So he came through the back lot, walked through the store, and he's outside looking for Fish and Frank's. And they're saying, "Well, this is Fish and Frank's." That's Fish and Frank's. That place, that can't be. I mean, he's picturing, you know, OCC and Bass Pro with glass-etched fronts and waterfalls and restaurants. And it's this little tiny crap hole, you know? I mean, we tried to paint the floor. It didn't work real well.
No, it didn't.
So, anyway, that was a perfect thing.
That's
where's
funny.
Fish and Frank's?
You
that's Fish
it.
Frank's. Okay, anyway.
Just put that on a shirt.
Hey, England.
Just a little crap hole.
Yeah. This ain't no boutique. So, anyway, love you guys in Great Britain. Hello. Thanks for listening, guys. Alligator Creek Poacher's Cut. That's where we're at.
I've just heard of a couple jacks right there at the mouth. That's what I got. Never heard of anything up in the creek. Nothing.
I've heard nothing.
Okay. All right. For all that, I got possible jacks. Oh, boy, that was worth the time. All right, Ponce de Leon Park.
Small snappers, black drum. What was the other fish that he was talking about the other day that he got in there? I can't remember.
Was it sand bream?
No, I would assume it was probably small snook, but he rattled off three fish that he'd been catching pretty regularly in there.
Maybe.
I had some guys catch some sand bream over there.
Okay.
A lot of pictures of those lately.
Yep.
They
actually got some sand bream from some other people who were fishing down there who didn't know what they were, and they said, we're just going to use them for bait.
Uh-huh.
So if you don't mind, if you catch some of those, we'll take them because, you know, we're going to use them for bait. So they doubled up on their sand bream count by taking other people's.
Nice.
I think that we're actually responsible for bringing sand bream. Brim, Mohara, Silver Jenny, whatever you want to call them. They get a lot of different names. I think Mohara is the
Irish
correct
pompano.
Name.
An Irish pompano is a related species of Mohara.
Okay.
But it's not that Mohara.
Right.
But all these different names, but it's literally a saltwater crappie is the best way to describe it. They're wonderful eating. They don't get, as adults, they're a little bigger than an average crappie, but wonderful fillets, white flaky, beautiful meat, and
they even have that same little paper mouth to them, except for it pulls out.
Yeah, it pulls out. If you've ever watched a video of those lionfish, the way they eat, where the mouth comes out and they grab the food and bring it back, that's how a sand bream eats.
Yeah,
same mouth, but non-invasive,
a
great
downwards
fish.
Pointing tube snout. So,
downwards pointing tube snout.
Yep, that's what it is.
Tube snout. I think I like that. That'd be a great name for a band. Hey, we're tube snout. Tube snout. I can't help it. Okay. Tube snout makes me happy.
It's good when he gets excited, I guess.
It is.
Okay.
It's very animated.
That's where it would be good to have it on video.
Yes.
But just to edit it down to a 3-minute show.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, just Frank sitting there spazzing out in the chair for 3 minutes. That'd be great.
Yeah, I can do that.
No sound right. Or anything. Or maybe some Benny Hill music.
Yeah. All right. I'm just glad you didn't say banjo. You know, I'm real happy with the Benny Hill stuff. Okay. Skating rink. Where the heck am I? Oh, the PGI canals.
There you go.
That's what I'm looking for. You know what we haven't talked about in forever is the barge canal.
I haven't heard much.
I drove by there the other day, and there was boats in front of it. I went to go in the elephant's butt, because there's a little spot. It's just north of the barge canal. It's two kind of mini bays that come together. When you look at it on a chart, it literally looks like somebody sat there. Looks like a butt imprint. And, you know, I called it the elephant's butt from look, because I was fishing, catching a lot of redfish there. The fishing was really good. I couldn't believe somebody was actually fishing there. I went to go in there. I said, nobody ever goes there. And there was boats in there.
Right.
I was like, damn.
Did you stop to see what they were catching?
I know, because there's not, if you go in there, if somebody's in there fishing and you go in, you've destroyed their fishing. So I'm not going to do
that.
Did you
at least holler from a distance and ask them what they were catching?
No, I was outside the bar.
Okay.
And that's a quarter mile out.
You can't holler that loud? Or they can't holler that loud back?
Well, I could holler loud enough for them to hear me, but what chance do I have of hearing somebody? I have a hard time hearing somebody across the room.
You have a hard time hearing somebody in your headphones.
Yes. My headphones are set up about twice as loud as everybody else, so I can understand what you're saying. All right. Anything in the PGI canals?
A lot of juvenile tarpon. Still getting some mixed reports of some jacks. A lot of small mangrove snapper. A few sand brim, especially way in the back by the bird section. And that's about it. Never heard of the black drum this week.
No, not so much with the drum, but a few snook.
I mean, the black drum should be in there, but it's literally been a week, so I'm not going to say for sure.
All right, over to Gilcrest Pier.
Question mark, question mark.
Josh?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Okay. All right, Alligator Creek Reef.
Some Spanish mackerel, a few bonnet heads, and a few spade fish. Not gangbusters, but a little bit of activity there.
I've only heard about the Spanish.
That's it? Really? Mm-hmm. There should be tarpon on it too, but I haven't heard about them either.
Should be.
Now, I like spade fish. I think they're awesome to catch. I take my crappie rod, my little 5.5-foot ultralight crappie rod, 2-pound test monofilament, put a little bit of 15-pound test on the end, a crappie jig, tip with a little piece of shrimp. You know, I lay a shrimp down. I'll take my knife and slice a little bit less than a quarter-inch pieces of shrimp meat off there, peel it, put it right on the point of the hook, cast it out there, and do just like I do for crappie, and now you get a fish that actually fights hard. And most of the ones we get here are not big. You go on the Atlantic up in the Carolinas and all those places up there, you got big spade fish.
Things are 15 pounds. You
know, they're 15 pounds. But most of the ones here are little fish. And it's a blast with kids. And you get them up, and then they start doing this tornado thing right underneath the boat. They're just literally looping around in just circles like crazy. And the kids get just a kick out of it. And it's, when they were in, I would always have a couple of these little rods on the boat. Two-piece rods so I could fold them up, keep them out of the way good, and then I'd keep the jigs rigged on them, and then when we'd see a school, I'd let the people catch them with these little tiny rods and just have a blast doing it, and especially when you group of kids on, because literally it's just bang, fish, bang, fish, bang, fish. You could just, in one after the other, if you've got a school of them, but you got to use the right stuff. It's got to be small, got to be peeled shrimp meat, can't have the... They don't like it with the shell on it. They want it peeled.
And they're definitely not going to eat a whole shrimp.
And, you know, the little crappie jigs, the marabous, the little rubber skirt tails, anything to make a little bit of a minnow look in the water with that little piece of soft shrimp meat on it. And they just follow as soon as you pause, bam, you got them. It was bam. I was moving my hands. I hit them, bang, the microphone. Hey, oh, geez.
Yeah,
sorry
that's
about
way
that.
Too loud. My earbones.
Yeah, that hurt.
Especially
okay.
With his being up louder.
My head's ringing at this point. All right, deep holes in the harbor.
Tarpon, definitely.
Catfish.
Yeah, plenty of catfish. A few Spanish mackerel. A few sharks. Most of the sharks seem to be in the southern hole or Pirate Harbor hole area.
A couple of nurse sharks this week.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Any size to them?
Yeah, big males. 7-8 footers.
Nice. Even better. And my biggest nurse shark I ever caught was with Frank. I caught that really big one out there off of the beach out there at Boca that one time we went out there. That was a pretty good one. It was 8-9 foot.
Yeah.
Good sharks. They're different to catch. They don't rip the line out, but when you get one on, it's challenging because they're going to do everything they can not to come in, and but it's kind of a long, slow dance. Mm-hmm. I mean, and if you messed up, you think you're going to get them no matter what, because it's kind of like a cross between a shark and a stingray, I guess, if you would. I mean, it's not a really vicious fish.
Right.
No, not at all.
But man, you gotta be on your game.
And they don't quit. You think you've got a nurse shark beat, and next thing you know, you're doing 30 laps around the boat.
That's what I'm talking about. You gotta be on your game. You gotta be right on the numbers, and they'll allow you a few mistakes, but you gotta make up for them quick, or you're not getting that fish. It ain't happening. All right, bait reports is what we're up to. Anybody know white bait?
I have not heard of anything white bait this week at all.
Scattering off the beach, but nothing like what you want when you have a net in your hand.
Alright. Any thread fins out there?
Yeah, there's some thread fins in the 20-foot holes. There's been a few reports kind of between marker 2 and the 41 bridge. And then all off the beaches.
They were up in the mouth of the Myakka 2 in the 14-foot hole.
So they're definitely scattered around. They're not great, great giant numbers, but there's definitely enough out there that are cast nettable or get out to that clean water. You can see beaky a few.
All right. Pinfish anywhere?
No, I have not heard of much on pinfish at all. I would imagine they're starting to move back in there in the ICW behind Boca Grande because of the nice grass, but since the red tide, I've got zero.
Anything, Josh?
No.
Okay. And I'll do the red tide stuff. I think I get to the email here to just kind of give you guys an idea of what's going on. I get the updates from the FWC. I think I saw it right there. Okay, red tide report. Let's see, Sarasota County, very low to high concentrations, offshore, background to medium concentrations in Sarasota County, so that would be a yellow, low to very high concentrations offshore Charlotte County. That means along the beaches in Gasparilla, Boca Grande, those areas, you're gonna have real patchy bad red tide, and then it's gonna be nothing. So literally it's about, you know, 100 feet can make a biggest difference you could ever imagine. Background to high in Lee County, another red one, Charlotte County red. Collier County down south of us is background to medium, so it's kind of a yellow. You're not gonna really have much. A lot of fish kills all over the state, from all kinds of stuff, but red tides, literally, they're actually listing here Casey Key, Manasota Beach, Nokomis, Siesta Key, Venice, North Jetty, Charlotte County, Inglewood Beach, Manasota, Lemon Bay, Captiva, Gasparilla Island, all over the place. Right. And so it's one of those things where you're going to have to be careful about the red tides. I'll get it updated, put the new map up here in just a few minutes. Freshwater fishing reports, what do we got?
Bass are still pretty much doing fairly well. Shiners are the key thing. You know, guys are fishing them both under bobbers and putting them on a sinker and getting them down a little bit deeper in the water. If you can find any of the culverts that are running with some heavy flowing water, any of the spill dams that got a little bit of heavy flowing water overboard, seems to be where guys are catching numbers. Not really quality, but definitely some numbers. 1 to 3 pounders pretty consistently.
If you're looking for quality, what you need is some areas that are around heavier vegetation that those bass are going to be using to hide out during the daytime hours. You can fish top waters earlier in the morning, like real early in the morning, like before the sun comes up early in the morning. Once the sun is up and over the horizon, go ahead and switch to something that runs a little bit deeper. Rattle traps are a good choice. Weighted soft plastics that'll get down closer to the bottom will also work. But, you know, once the sun gets higher than about 9 o'clock, you're really going to have a tough time of it until evening. So fish the morning, take a break, take a nap, have some lunch, have some dinner, then come back and fish the evening.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you can get out, get it first thing in the morning while it's still a little cooler. All right, let me see if I can get tarpon maps up here. There's the program, and there it is. Almost. Ah, got it. All right, let me get the brush out to make my dots with. Adjust the size, and I guess we're going to start with the red dots, the better fishing areas.
Okay. Basically, I would start at Eljo Bean Bridge. Work your way right down the center of the river, going out through all the 20-foot holes.
Okay.
And then I would also put a couple of them closer towards the west wall.
Lower wall or upper wall?
Upper wall, radio tower north.
Okay. Any place else you would call good on tarpon?
I don't think the Peace River is good enough to red dot.
Well, we can do that on a yellow. Red dot, what do you think about 30, like in the 30 feet of water out by Boca Grande Pass or something?
I'd probably go with the yellow dot because I haven't heard enough consistent things for the last couple days.
So yellow dots might get quite a bit here. So we're going to do yellow dots way up on the Peace River. Got a lot of that up here. And then...
I'll probably do some yellow dots around the 41 bridge too because I've been hearing a hodgepodge here and there.
Okay, and
that
way out
be going off, and I just haven't heard enough yet.
Way out in the Gulf.
Yep.
Okay.
And then I would also put some right down there by the Captiva along the ICW. Yellow dots.
There's Boker, there's Captiva. Past redfish or down two redfish?
Maybe down two redfish at the farthest.
All right. What about Ponderosa outside Sanibel, inside Sanibel?
Haven't heard anything to be...
Josh?
Yeah, it's not really good enough to earn the yellow dot, I don't think.
Matt Lachey, yellow dot.
What about white dots, chance of? Would that be better?
Put them down there around Sanibel on the inside.
All right. What about Matt Lachey? Is that white dot or yellow dot?
Yellow dot.
Okay. All right.
And would you do a wider yellow inside turtle?
I'd probably do a white dot. Unless you're trout fishing.
Unless you're trout fishing.
Right.
Okay. All right. Okay, that one's done. And now, let's see. As far as tarpon goes, you know, they've been out in 30 to 40 feet of water in the Gulf.
Yep. Especially as you work your way a little bit further north from, say, Gasparilla Pass, working your way up towards Minnesota.
Okay.
Seems to be a little bit more consistency that way. I'm sure they are south too. I just haven't heard of it in the last few days.
Okay, in the deep holes.
Definitely, they're scattered in there. They're on the top, they're on the bottom. They're eating thread fins, bait busters, and also ladyfish. And that's kind of anywhere you're at in the harbor, with the exception of getting up there up in the river part, upriver of the Peace River. I would imagine that they're going to hit bait busters and tilapia. You might get them to crush a ladyfish if you take it up there, because I've done fairly well up there by the water treatment plant and the campground area on ladyfish.
What do you got that looks like a brown hoplo?
Tube jig.
Because the thing about those hoplos... A lot
now,
of
what the, is that? That armored catfish?
Yeah.
Okay.
Armored catfish called a brown hoplo.
It's one of the smaller versions of the regular pleco.
Right.
Hoplosternum litoral. They're actually not related to the plecos.
They're not
related to Corydoras catfish, which are real popular aquarium catfish.
Yeah.
It's a giant Corydoras that grows to about 6 or 7 inches long. The way that they move through the water and what gets them nailed by those tarpon is they kind of roll the way that a tarpon does. You know, they're living out there on the bottom, they're eating little tiny insects and insect larvae out of the mud, but they need to go get an air bubble every now and then. So they race up to the top, they fart out their old air bubble on the way up, they grab the new air bubble, and then they race right back down to the bottom.
Okay.
So if you want to imitate what a brown hoplo is doing, you need something that comes off the bottom, hits the top, and then turns right around and goes back down. And a lot of times they get crushed on their way back down because it's easier to judge where they're going to go.
You know how you could just about do that? Is if you had a slip bobber and then took like that storm swim bait,
because
they're a little bit heavier, and get like the 4-inch one or maybe even the 5, and then put the line through and make yourself a little bit of a leader, and when you cast it out, it would drop it down, and as you pull it, the bobber would pull it towards the surface, and then just let it go again, create the slack to let it drop back down.
Gotcha.
What do you think?
You're going to want a big bobber.
Yeah, I mean, I've never tried that, but...
You got those big 4-inch parafloats, that would probably work pretty well for that.
It's going to have to be a bobber with a real loose hole in it, and I have no idea if this would work, boys and girls. This is just one of these weird Frankism, maybe this thing would go. But I was kind of thinking of, you know how when you do an anchor and you put the ball on the anchor to pull it up that way? Because if you're just trying to lift your rod, you'd have to have... That would be a... It would
be
really
hard. You have to reel
it
all the way up to the top and then drop it back down.
It would be really hard, but if you had something on the surface where you could just pull back on, that would take it up and then let it drop down without bringing it in so much. Because you really want it to go more vertical up and down, taking it.
Yep. You could cast over a tree branch.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of what I was thinking of. Is how do I pull it straight, more straight up? And if you have an oversized float on that the line can just go through, you could pull it, the bobber would create resistance. You know, you could do it while you're lifting your rod, trying to get it come straight up. And then when it hits the bobber, you just let it go slack and let it fall straight back.
Because that's one of the hard things about some of this tarpon fishing, is trying to imitate the things that they're actually eating up there. You know, it's fairly easy to imitate a threadfin. We all kind of have an idea what to do for that. A ladyfish, you can kind of imitate a ladyfish with a big old hoagie or something like that. But how do you imitate a brown hoplo? Think about how he acts and then try to figure out a way to make that lure do the same thing.
Yeah, if the storm had didn't, I think what I would do to better imitate that hoblo is on the paddle tail on the storm, I would take a scissors and cut part of the outside roundness off that tail, make it thinner so it didn't have quite as much up and down to it, and just more of a wiggle. And if you took and cut a lot of the paddle off it with a scissors and made it more narrow like that, I think that would be even a better imitation of it. I think the paddle's too much.
It might be. They do swim pretty hard when they're going up, because they're trying to get to the surface as fast as they can and turn around and head back down as fast as they can, because they know they're vulnerable.
So, okay. Well, you know, that's something to think about. Well, boys and girls, now you know how we figure out all these different things and what we're trying. And, you know, this is literally the way we do it. We sit around and talk about it, and we go out and we play with this stuff and see what we can do about what kind of bobber it would take to do this.
Are we still doing the radio show? I thought we had stopped.
No, we're still on the show.
Oh crap, I've been talking about this long. Okay, just edit that part out.
Okay. So anyway, let me make that smaller. Okay, yeah, no, the radio show's still going. Okay, and we're only an hour and 22 minutes into it, so that's not bad for us. Okay, I guess that was it. We're down to the tarpon. Any last words, thoughts?
Stay hydrated, take advantage of the really nice weather, and head offshore, because there's a lot of really cool species to get out there right now.
I think I was going to buy a big offshore boat, but God, that's $200, $400 worth of fuel every time I go out.
It's pretty pricey.
So I thought, why can't, you know, I have this gorgeous flats boat hull that I've had for years. Why not build that with all the decks to get out there? And I mean, I can literally run 20-30 miles out in the Gulf on 15-20 gallons of fuel, rather than 100 gallons of fuel, or, you know, 75, 100 plus gallons of fuel, because big boats hard to push through the water.
Yeah,
it's a good plan.
Is it?
I think it is.
Okay, well, we've got Frank with a plan. So everybody be afraid. There is a plan there, and watch.
Hey, look. If you're heading out there, plan to do some trolling while you're out there. We still have a lot of the pelagic opportunities, and still so few people really taking advantage of it. And we keep hearing those off and on reports of people seeing a sailfish but not being ready for it, having mahi swim by but they weren't ready for it. You know,
oh man,
kings are skyrocketing, but they weren't ready for them.
Five people at ICAST, locals that I ran into, all had mahi come up underneath the boat. They're grouper fishing, whatever, and they had to tell me about all these mahi that they didn't catch any of.
Yep.
And literally the boat swarmed full of mahi, nice size fish, great eating fish, and they did not have one rod, regular spinning rod, with like a number two hook on, or number two a two-aught hook on it, a little bit of leader, ready to free line at these fish.
Yep. And it's better to have the line out there, you know, but at least have it ready to go, ready to cast.
Well, if it's in the rod holder with the hook on it, ready to go, just sitting there, and all of a sudden they show up, you can put a shrimp on it, you can put a squid on it, you can put a piece of sardine on it, you can put anything on it and get it in the water and try and get them to eat.
Yep. The easiest thing is probably a piece of cut sardine and have a little handful of them chopped up there, so you can throw your handful.
Not the easiest, but the best.
It's a fairly simple thing to do. All you have to do is be prepared for it.
Right. Before you leave to go grouper fishing right now, and the strongest suggestion we get at least a 1 pound or 5 pound box of sardines or thread fin or whatever you want. Cut them up into little, like, 1 inch wide pieces. Put them all in a Tupperware container. Put the lid on, freeze them, and then take them out, put them in the boat in a cooler. And have at least a little bit of it thawed out so you can get some of it on there. Because literally it's Florida and they're going to thaw. So if you can put one piece of sardine, hook one of those dolphin, and leave them in the water while everybody else gets their stuff ready, that gives you about 3 minutes to get ready with another rod.
And listen, you guys like your chum bats so much for those white bait. Chum bats work great for those chopped up pieces of sardines, because sometimes everybody's fighting a fish, those mahi come by. You know, you didn't have an opportunity to do anything because you had your hands tied up. You got your chum bat. They probably didn't go that far. Start slinging in the direction that they went.
Yeah, because it's an awesome meal, and, you know, really sad to miss out on. So, anyway, here we go. The producer of the show, in other words, me, has just started the music. So that means we have to end. We're out of time.
We're obligated at this point.
Obligated.
The show's over.
Robert, any last word?
Nope, just have a good day and enjoy yourself.
My last word is umlangata.
Umlangata?
That's my last word.
How about this one? Pseudo-anti-disestablishmentarianistic.
No, you can pick a better last
word. It's the longest
one. I know. Anyway, Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert across from me, and Captain John, publisher Josh.
John?
Well, I was almost there. Ouch, he's throwing stuff at me. Make him stop, Mom. Publisher of Waterline Magazine, host of a fishing show of some name.
Fish and Talk Radio is what we call it.
And the Fish Coach.
Crap, soon music's to
be,
over.
Soon to be Charter Boat Captain.
You got too many titles.
Yeah. Say goodbye, Robert.
Goodbye, Robert.
Bye, Josh.
Bye, Robert.